I woke up in a birthing sack, panicked and choking on amniotic fluid. I clawed at the fleshy walls, fighting with all my terrified strength to free myself. With a wet, ripping sound, I was dumped onto the muddy cobbles of the street below, twisting my ankle as I landed. Cold rain blasted my naked body clean of the sack's liquid. I tried and failed to get to my feet. The street was alien to me. An insane medley of architecture ranging from the modern to the prehistoric. The sky above boiled with storm clouds, illuminating my surroundings with nonstop flashes of lightning. A man walked over to me. His hair was matted with filth, and the rain streaked down his mismatched leather clothes. He said nothing, just watched me squirm on the floor. "Please," I said, "help me." He answered by slamming a foot down on my face, breaking my jaw and making my vision reel. He moved on to my limbs, stamping and tugging until he heard the bone snap. Crippled, naked, and screaming, there was nothing I could do to defend myself when he started to eat me alive. My introduction to hell wasn't unusual. Very few people survive their first hour, let alone their first night. When they die, they go through the same thing again, emerging from a new birthing sack in another part of the city. Eventually, they learn to attack the first person they see, and if they're lucky, they'll be able to kill that person. And that's the one rule of hell: the strong take from the weak. Get used to the idea and you might just make it through the afterlife. I'm going to give you a helping hand. Consider this your handbook to hell, a primer on the inferno. Make no mistake, though. I'm not doing this out of the goodness of my heart. When you die, you're going to own me. Don't worry about trying to find me. I guarantee we'll run into each other eventually. Eternity is a long fucking time, so it's a matter of when rather than if. Do as I tell you, and you'll have a better chance than most of avoiding my own nasty introduction to the pit. Some people swear they saw a light at the end of the tunnel when they died. To my mind, those people either hallucinated or they're lying. Most of us just wake up in a birthing sack a few minutes after death. The buildings of hell are covered in the things, horrible, yellow-brown pimples, growing out of the brick. I've already mentioned that the first thing you need to do is claw your way out and get ready to fight. And this is where the real bitch of the situation comes into play, since not everybody has the strength to break through their sack's flesh. You get the same body you had just before you died. So let's say you were born a cripple, or maybe you died too young or too old. Tough shit. You're going to have a rough eternity drowning in birthing fluid over here. If you manage to break free of your sack, don't waste time moping around, wondering what the fuck happened. Get on your feet and get ready to defend yourself. Chances are good that the first person who sees you is going to be hungry. There are no plants or animals in hell, so cannibalism is your only option if you don't want to starve to death or have to start over. Aim to kill the first person you see. It might take you a few tries. Most of hell's residents have been fighting for survival a lot longer than you. They might have armor made from tanned skin, scavenged metal and bone. They'll almost certainly have a shiv, club, or axe. All of that will be useful to you if you can take it from them. The next thing you need to do is find shelter. It never stops raining in hell, and pneumonia is a shitty way to die. Luckily, you'll have a selection of buildings to choose from. With half a roof and no furniture, how about an ancient Egyptian mud brick hovel? If people have built it, you can find a crumbling version of it in hell. Pick a building, kill any squatters you find, and move in. The best houses are the ones that come with a supply of scrap metal and timber. Not only are these good for making weapons with, they're also vital for getting drinkable water. I learned the hard way that hell's rain is teeming with disease. It has to be boiled before it's safe. So getting a fire going and something to make a bowl with is a necessity. So we've killed our first man and found a home now. Good. Things are going well. Get that far and you're going to want to hang on to what you have forever. But you won't. Something will kill you eventually and you'll have to start over. My record is a year, if you want to beat that. You'll need to understand hell and its denizens. The people of hell can be grouped into two categories. The first, the fresh meat. Those are the ones who just climbed out of a birthing sack. It's kill or be killed when it comes to fresh meat, and always has been. The new meat wants clothing and tools, and will kill to get a hold of them. The second category, the residents, view fresh meat as a quick and easy supply of food, leather and bone. Residents have an easier time of it for sure, and all of them will fight to retain the resident status for as long as they can. Make no mistake, though, residents victimize each other just as much as they prey on the fresh meat. If you're a woman, for instance, well, you better get over any hang-ups you have about rape. Women get raped in hell far more than men. It's just a fact. If you're not one of those bodybuilders or warrior women, do the smart thing and prostitute yourself for protection. Self-respect doesn't keep you breathing. Remember how you get the body you had just before you died? Well, that fact forms the core of hell's society. The truth of the matter is that throughout history, it's usually been men who die in battle. That means that in hell, there are a lot of men with young, strong bodies fit for war. You don't like it? Tough. Those are the guys who call the shots. If you can't fight them, you better do as they tell you. If you live long enough and fight well enough, you might get invited into one of the resident tribes. These are groups of people who band together for the sake of safety and numbers. Believe me, being part of a group makes things a lot easier in hell. However, keep in mind that you're only part of the tribe for as long as you're a resident. Get yourself killed and it's back to being fresh meat. Tribes offer the closest thing to civilized society you'll find in hell. If you're part of a tribe, you have people on your side who probably won't kill you unless shit gets rough. Doesn't sound like much, but that's about as good as it gets. My own survival record was thanks to getting into a tribe. Life was good for a while there. We had about 50 soldiers and plenty of girls to fuck. Nobody could touch us, and the men abided by an honor code. So the usual fear of being stabbed in the back by your friends wasn't too much of an issue. I could have spent my eternity in reasonable comfort, but hell has ways of fucking over a good thing. Human flesh and boiled rainwater doesn't exactly make for a balanced diet, and sooner or later, even the strongest resident dies of malnutrition. I did well to last a year on it, though the last few months were agony. If I believed in God, I'd swear he designed hell in such a way that nobody stays on top of the food chain for long. Most of the damned live in Dees, the city of hell. That's where all the fresh meat is born, and considering the size of the place coupled with the short life expectancy, a lot of people will spend eternity without ever setting foot outside of Dees. Take my advice. Do not leave the city. Things are rough on the streets, that's true. But trust me when I say it gets a whole lot worse if you try to leave. Dees is surrounded by a wasteland called Gehenna. At first glance, it doesn't look like much, just an empty expanse of gray stretching out into infinity. Sometimes the damned lose that fire in the belly, the will to survive, and set off wandering into Gehenna. Most of them never come back. I made the walk myself once, a long time ago. And I don't care how hard you think you are, spend enough time in hell and it starts to break you down. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm a good person who never deserved this. Nobody can say that and not be a liar. I'm not evil, though. Or rather, I wasn't. Not until I got to hell. You murder, rape, and torture because you know they'll do the same to you. You're murdered, raped, and tortured because they know you'll do the same to them. Give it long enough and you just don't want to face it anymore. That's when you take the walk into Gehenna. The first couple of miles I walked were nothing special. The rain stopped after a while, the sludge beneath my feet giving way to gray ash. And I caught my first glimpse of hell's sky beyond the clouds. It was a flat gray with a white sun, completely devoid of beauty or warmth, and I trudged on. While walking through Gehenna, I lost any urge to eat, drink, or sleep. My body started to waste away, but I didn't care. Even when my skin started to peel away and my bones were exposed, I didn't care. The further I walked, the hollower I became in my mind, body, and soul. I don't know what would have happened if I'd kept going. Frankly, I don't want to know. Some part of me still wanted to live, so I turned back. I'd walked for days, maybe weeks, yet when I turned around to D's, it was only a few steps away. I stepped back into the city and my body finally fell apart. When I emerged from my birthing sac, I swore never to step foot into Gehenna again. There are ways to leave hell, and that should be obvious. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you, would I? Sometimes the living get into their heads that they want to talk with the dead. They get their crystals, incense, and spirit boards in the hopes of reaching their loved ones. Most do nothing more than trick themselves into thinking they've made contact. They smile or cry, convinced their beloved granny is playing the harp on a cloud somewhere before getting on with their lives. A few have the skill to actually reach us, though. They can open a gate between hell and the world of the living that we perceive as a pillar of fire stretching down from the clouds. As soon as one of those pillars show up, the damned scramble to be the first to get to it. You haven't seen the true nature of man until you've watched thousands of the damned swarming over each other, kicking, biting, and clawing to be the one who escapes. Contacting the dead always results in a bloodbath. Even the most civilized tribes fall apart the instant it becomes clear that only one of them can leave. I've left hell twice now. Left my body behind and ridden that pillar of fire up into the clouds. Some people believe that you can be possessed by demons. Let me tell you something. Demons aren't real. What the living see as demonic possession is just one of the damned testing out their new body. Let's face it. If you've fought your way through hell to get back to the world of the living, you're not going to be on your best behavior for long. Sooner or later, we all take things too far. Our host dies or their family caves and recruits an exorcist. Then we're fresh out of the birthing sack and on the streets again. When you get to hell, remember my advice and that you owe me one. And maybe we can form a tribe someday. For the time being, though, I want to see what my new body can do. By now, you should have a good idea of what you can expect from hell. You know to kill the person you first see when you fight your way out of a birthing sac. You know to find clothing, tools, and shelter. You know that no matter what you do, how well you do it, someday it's back to being fresh meat. Deez is the biggest city you can imagine. Tribes fight and die for territory, and taking a wrong turn is a fucking death sentence. You'll get a feel for where you should and shouldn't go eventually. Develop the kind of street smarts you need to stay a resident for more than a day. Even so, there are places in D's that you should know about. Let's do a little sightseeing tour of hell. Maybe the advance warning will do you some good. Allow me to tell you about the first time I saw Skin Street. I dropped out of my birthing sack onto the road. I stood straight back up and got myself ready to fight. But nobody was there. Not one single person was out on a street that stretched for miles in either direction. I relaxed a little and took a look around. Most of the streets in D's are a labyrinthine network of buildings. You spend most of your stay in hell paranoid that, just around the next corner, there's someone ready to beat you down. Skin Street isn't like that. It's a single straight line with only the rain and the darkness to hamper visibility. I felt more vulnerable there than I felt in any other part of D's. You ever walked into a wide empty space and suddenly felt exposed? Well, imagine also being naked, unarmed, and in hell. Still, I knew what I was supposed to do. The first step was to find some clothing. And that's where I learned how Skin Street got its name. Every building, every busted street light and gas lamp was decorated with flayed skin. I'd been in hell long enough by that point to not be too freaked out, but I'd be lying if I said it didn't affect me. In a fucked up kind of way, It reminded me of Christmas, you know? People hanging wreaths and lights from their houses, that sort of thing. I remembered the time I'd spent with my family with my kids on Christmas morning, and feelings like that get you killed. I pushed them back down and pulled some scraps from the nearest building. If somebody was going to leave clothing material lying about, well, I might as well take it, right? I didn't know it at the time, but every step I took on Skin Street was being watched. When the attack came, I didn't even get a glimpse of the guy. And bang, my skull fractured from an expert swing of a club. Whoever hit me went for my eyes the second I hit the floor. He stuck his fingers right into my eye sockets. I was blind and crying like a baby when he started to peel away my skin. Here's the thing. Some people are fucked up even by hell standards. The loners, serial killers, stalkers, and psychos all make their way to Skin Street in the end. Most of the damned use the whole body of a kill, but the Skin Street people like to take trophies. They leave their ornaments out as bait for the ignorant, skulking in the shadows and waiting for the best moment to ambush. If you find yourself on Skin Street, you're going to have to think fast. Forget clothing. Just grab a rock, piece of wood, or anything else you can use as a weapon. Stay out of the shadows. Keep checking behind you and get out of there as quickly as you can. You're going to be chased in hell, that's unavoidable. At some point, you'll stumble into somebody bigger than you, or you'll find yourself outnumbered. Forget about a fair fight. If somebody can take you down without you fighting back, you bet that's what they'll do. It's easy to lose focus when you're running for your life. You can forget to pay attention to your surroundings, and that, my friend, is a big mistake. The outskirts of Perdition Farms are littered with billboards. They promise free food and safety to anybody fucking stupid enough to believe them. The tribes that fight over that particular territory like to herd people off the streets and into the industrial complex they call home. The good news is that those tribes aren't going to kill you. The bad news is that they're big fans of taking people alive. They've got a project, you see. Been working on it for as long as I can remember. I couldn't tell you who originally decided that hell should have organized food production, only that the idea stuck and that over the years, countless tribes have taken it upon themselves to try and make that dream a reality. Get yourself captured by them and you can look forward to a bit of slave labor. For the most part, the Perdition Farms tribes try to make use of the birthing pods as a source of food. They force their slaves to harvest them from the walls, grind them up in industrial vats, mix them with blood, body parts, rainwater, and anything else that could conceivably make a broth. The life of a slave is short, brutal, and disgusting, particularly when those slaves are then used as guinea pigs for the latest concoction. You see, amniotic fluid can be drunk if you're desperate, though drinking too much is guaranteed to make you empty your stomach from every available orifice. The flesh of the sacks is a different matter entirely, though. I couldn't tell you exactly what the birthing sacks are. Some people say they're actual flesh, while others swear they're more like a fungus. What I do know is that they repair themselves over time. Eat some of their flesh, and over the next few days, you'll grow a new birthing sack inside you. It's a small mercy that you won't live long enough to see it break through your skin. You'll be dead shortly after your stomach bursts. If you're lucky, your days as a slave will end when the tribe decides they want some real meat. They're not stupid enough to test their broth themselves, not when there's no shortage of slaves in hell. I can't force you to stay out of Perdition Farms. I can only offer advice. In my opinion, if you think you're being herded there, it's better to take whatever's to hand and cut your own throat. I'd take fresh meat status 100 times before spending another day at the farms. So maybe you're thinking to yourself, hey, I'm the kind of nut job who'd join a cult. Is there anything in hell for me? If that sounds like you, then the Boneyard has you covered. There's a certain kind of religious fanatic who really does belong in hell. I'm not talking about the old dears who bake cakes to raise money for the new church roof here. I'm talking about the guys who went to war because God commanded it, who burned women for supposedly consorting with demons, and who saw nothing wrong with fucking the odd kid. When those people get to hell, they're too thick-headed to make sense of what happened. Why face reality when you can pretend it's all just a test of faith? They tend to find like-minded folks in the Boneyard. I'm told that at one time, the Boneyard was a cathedral surrounded by a cemetery that stretched from horizon to horizon. Maybe that's true. I don't know. These days, it's a shanty town of temples and churches built from materials scavenged from the streets. Everywhere you look, you'll find wild-eyed zealots preaching their own twisted version of redemption and gangs of masked men on the prowl for fresh converts. Mortification of the flesh is the main pastime in the Boneyard. If you listen to the hum of sermons, you'll be informed of how the flesh is wicked and must be purged of sin. How lucky are we to be given such a holy duty? How fortunate to be given the opportunity to redeem ourselves before God. The people of the Boneyard have had a long time and plenty of fucking practice when it comes to mastering torture and degradation. I'm not a good person. I've killed, raped, and cannibalized. But I can honestly tell you, I'd never have been able to dream up some of the shit that goes on in the Boneyard. I wandered in there by accident once, and I've never been able to get what I saw out of my brain. I watched a woman, naked and bound, forced onto her knees and violated with iron rods. A preacher sewed his own eyes and lips shut in front of a crowd before sawing off his manhood with a piece of slate. A boy of maybe 14 was publicly crucified. A girl was drowned in shit. An older man had sharpened flints pushed under his fingernails. I could list off 100 other atrocities done in the name of redemption. Stay away from the Boneyard. The people there decided that hell just isn't hellish enough for their liking. Forget about redemption. Forget about God. The only way out of hell is by riding a pillar of fire and taking over a living body. Focus on that if you want escape. The damned can't offer you salvation. The damned only offer pain. If I'm going to make the most of life on earth, I'm afraid I'm going to have to skip town. While I've had plenty to keep myself entertained, this body just isn't suitable for a run-in with the police. It's only a matter of time until some nosy neighbor thinks to pick up the phone. With the humidity over the last few days, Mommy and Daddy are already pretty ripe. Here's something you have to understand. Hell is a huge place. I've given you fair warning about a few of the locations I myself have run into, and that'll have to do. Even if I wrote a library's worth of novels solely dedicated to mapping out the distinct locations within D's, I still couldn't tell you everything about the city. What I can do is give you a bit of information about some of the damned. Take a moment to think about all the celebrities you know. How many of them do you reckon would do well in D's? Not many, I'll wager. Perhaps none. Fame and fortune on earth doesn't count for shit when you're dead. Very few people are strong enough, mean enough, and downright psychotic enough to earn a reputation in hell. Those few who have what it takes are people you never want to meet. The Slaughter Man is one of hell's legends. A huge bearded man with filed teeth, bloodshot eyes, and foam on his lips. Rumor has it that the day he first emerged from a birthing sack, he was unlucky enough to land at the feet of a slaver tribe. While those tribesmen chuckled to themselves and readied their clubs and whips, only too happy to take some fresh meat captive. Outnumbered a dozen to one, naked, unarmed, and brand new to hell, most people wouldn't stand a chance. If you believe the stories, the Slaughter Man shrugged off the clubs battering against him and the whips cutting into his flesh, as though they were insect bites. He picked up the first slaver, put his hand into the man's mouth, and pulled his jaw right out of his skull. He moved on to another, then another, tearing them apart with his bare hands until the survivors turned and fled. Nobody knows for sure who he was in life. I've heard theories, though, the most popular one being that he was the berserker of Stamford Bridge. Supposedly, a single Viking held up the English army single-handedly. It didn't matter that he could never win, or that he was outnumbered, or that his enemies had better weapons and armor. He stood on that bridge and he fought. By the time he was brought down, he he'd killed no less than 40 men. I don't know how true any of this is. I've never seen the slaughter man for myself, and I don't fucking want to. What I can tell you for sure is that people don't become legendary in hell without good reason. I'd guess that the only one who knows the truth is the slaughter man himself, and he isn't saying anything. Since the day he arrived in hell, he's only spoken once. The fleeing slavers heard it as the slaughter man tore their tribe apart. Naked, bloody, and surrounded by corpses, the slaughter man looked up to the storm-racked sky and bellowed a single word, Valhalla. I wasn't new to hell. I'd made myself some clothes and a wooden club, found shelter, and had a big slab of meat roasting over a campfire. The only thing I didn't have was a tribe. The area I'd been birthed in seemed slummy even for D's. All half-collapsed hovels and mud huts. Iron was scarce, barely enough to make myself a water bowl. All in all, not a good spot for a tribe. My plan was simple enough. I'd have a decent meal, carve myself a shiv or two in case I lost my club, then find somewhere more or less dry to sleep. After that, I'd set off to look for a tribe. Even the mildest tribal initiations result in a few scars and a broken nose, so I wanted to be as well rested as I could be. Sleep in hell is both vital and dangerous. There's a knack to finding somewhere that's simultaneously sheltered, hidden, and with access to an escape route. Even then, you never get more than a few hours at a time. In hell, the slightest suspicious noise should scare the shit out of you. A low, throaty growl definitely counts as a suspicious noise. I leapt out of my impromptu nest of skins and wood, raised my club, and returned the growl with one of my own. A woman had crept into my building and was staring at me with dilated pupils. She looked to be in a bad way, skinny, naked and covered in weeping sores. Her lips peeled back to reveal broken and jagged teeth. It took me all of a second to size her up. She'd been living rough for days or weeks. Judging from her protruding ribs and bloated stomach, she was well on her way to dying of starvation. So she was weak, hungry, and didn't even have a weapon. "I've already eaten," I said, relaxing a little and giving my club a few practice swings. "No sense in letting you go to waste, though." I took a step towards her and she bolted. She just turned right around and scampered away in a strange animal gait. I took after her, certain that I could outpace her. Even if there wasn't much meat on her, bones can still be useful. I chased her through a few streets, struggling to keep my footing on the muddy ground. When I finally got close enough to swing my club, she stopped dead. The suddenness of it caught me off guard and I tripped over her, losing my club as I fell. She howled in triumph, a sound that was echoed by a dozen other throats. That day, I learned two things about the hellhounds. The people who lose their minds and become little more than beasts after enduring centuries in hell. Firstly, they have the necessary animal cunning to hunt as a pack. And second, human teeth and fingernails are perfectly capable of ripping flesh from the bone. Modern doctors rarely thrive in hell. Academia and reliance on technology don't leave you in the best state to endure the endless violence and brutality. There are exceptions, though. The people who learn to sew their friends back together amid the machine gun fire of the Sami. Shamans, witch doctors, and holy men who endured famine and warfare. Survivalists who knew how to cauterize their own wounds in the middle of a forest. Those are some of the people who might just be strong enough to ply their trade to the damned. After all, working knowledge of basic medicine is just one of those things that's beyond a lot of the meatheads roaming D's. Most of hell's surgeons find a tribe as soon as they're able. Their tools might be crude, but they soon learn to make do. Flint, slate, and shards of glass serve as their scalpels. They make thread from human hair and needles from slivers of iron. Whenever a member of the tribe has an infected sore, a surgeon will be the one to drain the pus. A tribal surgeon could well save your life, but they'll do it without anesthetic. Then there are the freelance surgeons, the people who try to go it alone. They make themselves a uniform, the theory being that the damned will recognize them if they all look alike. It doesn't really work, but you can't expect much logic from people who've lost count of how many times they've died. For one thing, fashions change over time. I'm told that freelancers wore headdresses and bone necklaces at one point. The current trend is to mimic Venetian plague doctors by donning a beaked mask and wearing a long coat of fire-blackened skin. Freelancers are rare, very rare in fact. You'll see thousands of the damned for every freelance surgeon you come across. When you do come across one, be fucking careful. Firstly, surgeons don't get a free pass in hell. The damned are more likely to attack a freelancer than they are to barter their tools, clothes, or slaves in exchange for his services. You can't be certain if the man in the bird mask and black coat is really a surgeon, or somebody who murdered a surgeon and took his clothes. Perhaps they made the outfit themselves in order to draw the weak and the wounded close. Advertising doesn't always work as intended in D's. If the freelancer turns out to be genuine, that doesn't give you an excuse to drop your guard. Freelance surgeons aren't usually the most stable people. Put another way, freelancers are usually sadistic, fucking psychopaths. Sure, they might stitch you back together and send you on your way. They might also decide it would be more interesting if they stitched you to somebody else. They might think paying an arm and a leg for the service should be taken literally. They might turn out to be some wannabe serial killer who's yet to find their way to Skin Street. For each freelancer trying to do a tough job in a tougher place, there are a dozen or so Mengelis who want to try out their toys on somebody too injured to fight back. Stick with your tribe surgeon if you're lucky enough to have one. Failing that, learn to patch up your own wounds. Trust me, if you're able to read, you've already got the intellectual advantage over a lot of hell's residents. Universal education is pretty decent. And freelancers just aren't worth the risk. I'll be honest with you here. I don't know if Cambians actually exist. What I'm going to tell you is something that somebody else told me. It's up to you to decide if it's true or not. Personally, I really hope it isn't. People rape one another in hell. And it happens a lot. If you're not strong enough, it'll happen a lot to you. The good news for the ladies out there is that the damned men fire blanks. You'll almost never be impregnated. I say almost never because, if you believe the stories, there's an incredibly slim chance that a couple of those little swimmers will be awake and looking for an egg. Just to put this in perspective, we're talking conjoined twins levels of unlikeliness here, and that's just conception. The chances of a pregnant woman surviving the full 9 months in hell are probably conjoined triplets levels of unlikely. You're talking about a perfect storm of beating the odds here, but this is eternity. A monkey randomly mashing keys on a typewriter will eventually produce the complete works of Shakespeare if it goes at it for eternity. The result of that perfect storm of those monkeys with their typewriters is a Cambian, a child conceived and born in hell. I'm not saying they exist, okay? I'm saying I've met somebody who swears it's true and that he's seen a Cambian for himself. You see babies in their birthing sacks from time to time. Usually it's just a body. Occasionally you'll see one drowning. And most of the damned ignore them. They wouldn't survive a day on the streets even if you could afford to devote your full attention to them. So it's better to leave them be. It's only the really fucked up people who cut through the sacks and eat them. Anyhow, this Cambian, who may or may not have existed, apparently looked like a normal child. It cried, it shit, and it sucked its mother's tits just like a regular baby would. The mother was part of a tribe and they'd been able to protect her throughout her pregnancy. I couldn't tell you why. Curiosity, perhaps? When it was born, the whole tribe gathered around to have a look. Among them was the man who told me the story. Somebody I'd meet years later and eventually kill. This man cut the baby's cord and lifted it up to his face. Every man in the tribe had raped the mother at one point or another, and he wanted to see if the child looked anything like him. The Cambian looked like a normal child in every way but one. Its eyes were dead. lifeless, like a doll's. Sure, the kid was alive. It wriggled and cried like a normal baby. Those eyes were wide open, though, not scrunched closed like a newborn's eyes should be. Wide open, empty doll's eyes. If that story is true, I don't blame the tribe for killing the child. Something like that shouldn't exist. And this is the point where people like to have things nicely tied up. A few dragons slain, a few maidens saved. At the very least, you could expect some kind of moral lesson to think this over. I think that in this case, that sort of thing is missing the point. There are no dragons to slay, no morals to learn. We do not live happily ever after. There's no grand revelation, no clever twist, no purpose, no redemption, and no hope. There's only one eternity among our own kind. The last body I had in a living world didn't cope too well with my mind driving it. It's sometimes hard to remember that the lessons you learn in hell aren't a good fit for the civilized world. When murder is just a normal part of existence, you tend to keep doing it out of habit. The inevitable result is either death or exorcism and a trip back to the city of D's. Safe to say, I got a bit carried away the last time I was here. After my last taste of freedom, I knew I had to get back out of D's. My existence, ever since I squandered my last host, has been utterly dedicated to fighting my way back into a pillar of fire. I had to escape D's. After what I've seen, I had to. I had to get out. This new body seems a little more durable than the last one. And now that I'm back, let's take another trip into hell. It rains in hell. It rains all the fucking time, and that water has to go somewhere. Most of it drains out into Gehenna, where it sinks into the otherworldly ash and apparently disappears. The rest flows either into the sewers beneath the city or it collects in the Phlegethon swamp. Remember how it's a bad idea to drink the rainwater in hell without boiling it? While Phlegethon's water will kill you no matter what you do with it. Even letting the stuff touch your skin can be deadly. You see, the swamp isn't just filled with disease and rot. It's also brimming with chemical waste. One pool might simply be undrinkable, but another might dissolve your flesh. If you're mad enough to travel to Phlegethon, or unlucky enough to be born there, your odds of survival are slim. Phlegethon's waters are inky black, and it's impossible to tell just how deep a pool is by looking. It could be an inch, or it could be a mile. You never know whether or not your next footfall will plunge you into the cloying abyss. Worse still, there are places where the sewers gradually drain the water and create unseen vortices capable of dragging down even the strongest of the damned. To navigate the swamp, you're better off using the crumbled buildings as stepping stones. The corrosive water causes wooden supports to wither and collapse, so there's plenty of debris lying around to stand on. Even so, if you don't take it slow and keep your balance, it's easy to slip and subject yourself to an agonizing death. Last but not least are the wildfires. These are the reasons that even the most insane tribes don't try to establish a permanent stronghold in the Phlegethon swamp. All that chemical waste and decaying matter makes the swamp extremely volatile. A lightning strike or buildup of gases can result in immense explosions that ignite the swamp's surface for miles around. Wildfires move fast, and I guarantee that you won't be able to outrun one. The first time you see coitus, you could be forgiven for thinking you'd reached the very edge of D's. The pit is dozens of miles wide and several times as deep. At some point in the dim and distant past, a fragile alliance of tribes put their slaves to work digging a quarry. Why they did this is lost to time, but many believe it was an attempt to escape D's. Perhaps those tribes hoped that if they dug far enough, they'd eventually tunnel their way out of hell. In my view, the more likely answer is that the tribes were looking for resources. If that's true, then the excavation was a success. Miles below the surface, beneath the rock and dirt, there are caverns filled with veins of iron and copper. So far underground and sheltered from the relentless rain, it's far easier to create a fire hot enough to smelt ore. The value of such a position wasn't lost on the tribes, and that alliance soon showed just how brittle it was. After a short but savage burst of treachery, the initial settlers of Coitus all but wiped themselves out. Since then, the pit has been settled and mined countless times. Coordinated efforts from various tribes have transformed the quarry into an abyss. So far, these alliances have always been broken sooner or later, though. Coitus has many paths into its depths, and the lower you go, the more labyrinthian the pit becomes. The sprawling caverns shelter entire shanty towns and crude smelting facilities. Some are abandoned, others have been lost to cave-ins, yet there are still plenty of tribes who fight, join forces, and betray one another over the precious ore veins. By this point, you have to go pretty deep to find an untapped vein, and this is where Coitus becomes truly deadly. Anybody who thought they might be able to tunnel out of hell would be sorely disappointed once they learn what lies in the depths. In all these years, after digging for so many miles, not one person has run into some magical portal leading out of Dees. They also haven't run into magma for that matter. Instead, the deeper you go, the colder Coitus becomes. I've never been to the very bottom myself. I'm told that down there the air is cold enough to freeze your blood and shatter your skin. Maybe that's true. I could certainly believe it. On the rare occasion I've been to Coitus, I've always had to turn back once the walls became more ice than rock, and the narrow walkways became a death trap. If you have the numbers to do it, Coitus is still a valuable place to settle. Just remember that when hunger, cold, and greed are your constant companions, none of the damned can be trusted. I've told you about the Slaughterman previously, but Hell has other legendary figures, each with their own legends, the Ripper, the Grim Doctor, the Tyrant, and many more. So far, I've only encountered one of these figures. During my last stay in Hell, I came across the Pale Witch. As is always the case with legends, the truth about the Pale Witch tends to get lost amid the superstition. I've heard plenty of theories as to what she is. The Pale Witch is a Stratega who has the power of the evil eye. The Pale Witch is a Gorgon whose gaze turns her victims to stone. The Pale Witch is a succubus who entraps the minds of those she wishes to consume. All of that is bullshit. I've seen the Pale Witch and I know the truth about her. When I first saw her, I didn't realize who I was looking at. She was naked and locked in combat with an armed resident, so I just took her for fresh meat. Here's a tip for you. If you see a resident fighting fresh meat, kill both of them while they're distracted. I planned to do exactly that, but something about the fight seemed off. Residents usually have the upper hand in a fight against fresh meat, and this particular bout definitely seemed about as one-sided as it gets. She was naked, whereas he was clad in leather and bone. She was unarmed, whereas he had a club. She was wayfish, whereas he was huge. Despite him having the advantage, the resident was clearly terrified of her. The rules of Hell dictated that he should have cracked her skull, taken her skin, and eaten her flesh, but that just wasn't happening. He was uncoordinated and apparently desperate to escape. Every swing he took was clumsy, and the blows he did manage to land on her didn't seem to have any effect. I could only stare as this naked, vulnerable woman took the resident's club from his unresisting hand and swung it at his knee. I'm accustomed to the sound of bones breaking by now, but this time the noise caught me off guard. How the fuck was this happening? She brought the club down on his other knee, then his elbows, then his ankles, then his shoulders. She left him broken and screaming on the floor. She could have finished him off with a blow to the head, stolen his clothing, and taken her rightful place as a resident. That's how Hell works. Those are the rules I've learned through the bloody trial and error. But that isn't what happened. Rather than kill him, she sat down beside him in the mud and took his hand in hers. I actually thought she was going to console him, until she started breaking his fingers. One by one, she snapped the fingers on both of his hands with a calmness that made no sense to me. Torture is quite common in hell, but there's always purpose behind it. The people in Skin Street do it out of sadism, and the people in the Boneyard do it for their insane purification rituals. But this woman, she did it without emotion and without a reason. I honestly don't know if she even understood that she was hurting him. I don't think her mind works the same way as ours. Eventually, the resident lost consciousness. A man can only take so much pain before the shock gets him. Surely now she'd be satisfied. Surely she'd take his clothes and restore hell's order. But no. She stood up, tilted her head slightly, and uttered a noise for the first time. It wasn't a victory cry, nor was it even a sigh of relief. Instead, the sound she made was nothing more than a faintly bemused, "Hmm." It was as if she couldn't comprehend why her plaything had stopped moving. She stood up and stepped away from him, apparently content to leave him alive, unconscious, and crippled on the ground. She kept his club, but didn't take his clothing. The cold and rain didn't seem to bother her either. And then she looked at me. In that instant, I knew I was looking at the pale witch. I looked into her eyes and I couldn't move. I understood what she was straight away, and the sheer terror of it froze me. The pale witch isn't a Shratiga. She is Nagorgon, and she isn't a succubus. The pale witch is a Cambion. It's hard to put into words exactly how paralyzing the sight of a Cambion is. That perfectly serene face and those dead staring eyes just don't belong on a body that's otherwise human. It was like looking into the face of a mannequin and knowing that it's looking back at you. That noise again. That kind of detached curiosity shouldn't exist in the world of predator and prey. Might makes right, survival of the fittest. Nobody in the city of D's has any right to make that noise. She took an awkward step towards me, and I saw that her right leg was broken. It seemed that her fight with the resident had injured her after all. She just didn't notice it. She tried to walk normally, completely unaware that one of her legs had an extra joint. I don't care how tough you are, nobody should be able to put their full weight onto a broken leg without even wincing. She stepped closer, her zombie shuffle steadily closing the gap between us as I stared at her. She raised her club and my survival instincts finally kicked into gear. Her transfixing spell broke just enough for me to stumble backwards and avoid her swing. And I ran. I ran from a woman with a broken leg, and I'm not even ashamed of it. Looking back on it, there are some things I just can't comprehend. The Pale Witch is a Cambion, I'm certain of it. She was born in hell, and hell is all she's ever known. She also looked to be about 30 years old, and that just shouldn't be possible. No baby survives that long in D's, even if they had a tribe to protect them. There just isn't enough nourishment for an infant to grow into a toddler, let alone an adult. The Pale Witch is a walking impossibility, and her existence is a defiance of all reason. I would endure every torture the people of Skin Street in the Boneyard could conceive if it meant I would never, ever have to look her into her eyes again. And so this is it. This is the guide to surviving hell. Do with it as you wish. I'll see you around down there.